Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Good morning and good night. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new live episode of the
Geek Buddies.
We're here live on the Outlaw Nation channel. Excited to be jumping into a lot of things going on in the world of entertainment. We had a bug up our ass and we're like, fuck it, we're going to go live. So we're going live. This is the game here today. So thank you all for joining us live. We're going to jump into some trailers of the week. A supersized trailers section. We're going to jump into some Marvel stuff. Big old roundup happening at the end is our main topic. And we're going to jump a little baby reindeer review. And who knows, maybe other topics will pop up as we go along. But let's introduce ourselves first. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel, and I did not have a bug up my ass. I had a bug in my stomach yesterday and had food poisoning, but I'm still here and ready to party. And I'm also a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
Warrior.
This is Shannon McClung. I'm an actor and animated television writer. I'm sorry, I'm really thrown off by Mike's thing because we were talking before we started broadcasting, and I'm like, what food not to mention to me so Mike doesn't feel bad.
No, we're good now. But yesterday, if anybody mentioned any food, especially crab cakes, it didn't go well for me. So today I'm okay.
All right, well, that's good to know here. And guys, you know we're live, so we're gonna have some fun here today. And just a reminder that the Streamlabs and Super Chats are open. You want to send in some love, you want to send in some support to us here live on the show, the Streamlabs address is right there, pinned in the chats and the description of the video as well. And you can always send in your Super Chats as we go along, and we'll read them here throughout the show when they pop up. So I think we should just jump into it. Shannon, what do you got for us?
I've got some trailers! Wow. Because it's Friday and we're live and Michael's feeling better. So our first trailer that we're starting with is for a Netflix film that's going to be coming out on Memorial Day weekend, because it's not just the theaters that are big for Memorial Day. This one is called Atlas. Yeah. This is starring Jennifer Lopez, and this has a heck of a supporting cast in Simu Liu in a villain turn, Sterling K. Brown, Mark Strong. Basically, she is a bleak sounding future where an AI soldier has determined the only way to end war is to end humanity. So Jennifer Lopez plays Atlas, a soldier that is a very much against AI, because Simu Liu is playing AI, someone who's trying to take down humanity. She ends up having to team up with an AI to fight AI. Have some thoughts about this trailer, but I'll throw it over to you gentlemen first. Mikey, why don't you take it away? What did you think of our first look at Atlas?
Well, you know, it is a Jennifer Lopez movie, so it has that going against it from the start. It's not that I'm not fully against J-Lo, but J-Lo has never been the most dramatic of actresses, I would say. There's a certain kind of role that's great for J-Lo. And this is maybe straining the type of movie that you want to see J-Lo in. That being said, as a setup for a movie, I do think it's really interesting. I think it's particularly interesting to come out when it's coming out. I mean, traditionally, in our sci-fi world, mostly AI is used as a bad thing. I mean, most famously in Terminator, but, you know, when the AI becomes sentient, it usually doesn't go well for humanity. And that's sort of been, for the most part, obviously we have our Short Circuits, our other movies that kind of go against that. But in general, AI going smart means bad for humanity. And I think what's really interesting here is you have a movie where you had one piece of AI that went really bad and almost destroyed humanity. So humanity does not like AI. And then you have a movie where J-Lo has to work with another piece of AI and learn to trust that AI for survival. And given that we are living in a time right now where absolutely everybody is panicked that AI is going to take our jobs, but it does seem like AI is here to stay and is becoming more and more sophisticated by the second, it's interesting to see a movie come out that basically, in a very sci-fi futuristic way, wrestles with the how are we going to deal with AI? What is good about AI? Is some AI good? Is some AI bad? What's the best way that humanity can work with AI to move forward? So I think the movie's actually really, really interesting, but it is one of those things where, particularly as Shannon said, when you look at the cast, you're like, wow, Simu Liu, Sterling K. Brown, Mark Strong. Okay, and J-Lo's the lead. Okay, cool. I'll still see this thing, I think. I think I'm still going to watch it. So that was sort of my reaction to it. What did you guys think? Johnny?
I'll say this, I don't know if I can trust myself anymore when it comes to special effects. I'm just going to give you my opinion. The way it looked was awesome. I liked the colors. I liked the visuals of this. I liked the world they were presenting. Like, this is the thing, like a comic book, if the art is good and the story's not so great, I'm still going to enjoy the comic book because I'm being distracted by the visuals. Just how I'm built. I like visuals. Well, and so the visuals.
That explains your love for Zack Snyder.
That's true. It's true. I'm taking shots early. Okay. But I thought this was really good to see this play out because I was like, because I didn't like that. I was like an hour into that J-Lo one about saving her daughter. I was like, this is horrific. And so, boom, I thought that was this is interesting. And Mike, you bring up a great point. The story is also fascinating. And you've got Sterling K. Brown and you've got Simu Liu, two really good actors to kind of balance things out there for you. And yeah, I think J-Lo, you know, when J-Lo tries to be normal, it never really works for me. And her being like all upset and unsettled and all this, it when the computer is out acting you, that's not a good thing, in my opinion. And I don't understand. Are they leading to a relationship? Is it a friendship in the trailer? What is going on here? I think this showed way too much of what's going to happen. And clearly there's some corruption and they're going to figure that out. So overall, though, visuals, this film excites me much more than the previous one that she did for Netflix. So I will actually watch this one. And there are probably going to be moments where J-Lo is good. And look, J-Lo's been good in Out of Sight, Hustlers, Selena, and maybe a couple other films. But most of the time, it's really not, she's not that good, say, actress-wise and singing-wise, we find out recently. So to me, I'm like, well, what are we trying to do with the rebranding here? And I wonder if this film is a way of being like, you know what, I'm doing what I can. And that being said, the trailer, almost 5 million views. So I know people don't want to necessarily put a lot of stock in that, but I do. It shows interest. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you all that Jennifer Lopez has never been my go-to pick for a role. And when you're watching this trailer, because again, the supporting cast is so impressive, the moment that she comes on screen, I've always felt her to be a little inauthentic with her delivery. And automatically I'm thinking, who else could have done this? Could this have been Regina King? Could this have been Emily Blunt? Like automatically start recasting the film in my head, which is probably not a great sign. But as you both already put, the story, the premise is very, very interesting. And because, you know, it's on Netflix, this will probably be an afternoon watch when my wife and I don't have anything else to do. Or it might be after my wife falls asleep because she may not be into this one at all. What do you think, Mikey?
Well, no, I just to exactly what you said, I was just about to say, you know, there's just it seems as if there is a certain genre of movie that has been created in the past several years, which is the Netflix movie, which is the we paid a lot of money to some very big names to put them in this movie that has a big budget that maybe doesn't ultimately have the strongest script, ultimately has certain things going against it. And you wouldn't pay to go see it in a theater, but you will absolutely watch it. To John's point about the 5 million views, to what you said about you and Shaney watching it, it just seems like Netflix has really sort of nailed this. We have a movie coming out that probably wouldn't make it in theaters, but we're going to put it out on Netflix and we're going to have a bajillion people watch it the first weekend it comes out.
Yeah, and this is from Brad Peyton, who's been The Rock's favorite director recently with San Andreas and Rampage and what was it, Journey to the Mysterious Island. So he has a track record of, you know, taking an actor who maybe doesn't necessarily lean into the drama as strongly as they lean into other things and bringing out the best of them as much as they can. Because I liked San Andreas and I liked Rampage for the most part and his performance in it. So I'm hoping this is a good combo for her. And because, I mean, you know, I don't cheer against J-Lo, but I tell the truth about J-Lo, and it could be, and especially after that documentary, she could use a win. So who knows if this is going to knock itself out or knock it out of the park, rather, and knock us out when we watch it. We'll see.
Well, I think in general, the three of us try not to actively root against an actor or a director or a writer.
All evidence in the past 10 minutes to the contrary.
someone cheers a little harder than the rest of us about certain things. Yeah.
Well, we will all get to find out whether or not Brad Peyton and Jennifer Lopez are the new Brad Peyton and The Rock duo on May 24th when this one drops on Netflix. So our next trailer is this is the first trailer for the third season of one of my favorite shows, Welcome to Wrexham. So at this point, if you are not aware of what Welcome to Wrexham is, this probably isn't going to hold a lot of water for you. But a few years ago, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia purchased a European football team in Wrexham, Wales. And it was one of the lower leagues with the whole goal of getting them promoted. They are what, the oldest team in the UK, Johnny?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So the trailer for this is fantastic. I mean, the third season, it's set to Eye of the Tiger, which, you know, came out with Rocky III, and they are using the Rocky analogy. And Rocky I, he loses. Season one, we lost. Rocky II, he won. Season two, we won. And then you're just watching the way this town has come together and how it has been kind of catapulted to international fame because of the documentary. Yeah. But just seeing the way that McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, the care and the love they seem to have for this football team. This one warmed my heart. I cannot wait for this show. Johnny, take it away though. What did you think of our first look at Welcome to Wrexham season 3?
Yeah, you know, I've had a bit of a kind of thing on this, you know, because I'm a big fan of From Sunderland Till I Die, which is a great series on Netflix, and it's British made, it's British British players and all of this in the British club. So with Wrexham, I was a little like, Canadian coming, American coming in, and I know I'm American, but, you know, I'm Latino-American, so for me, it's like soccer's mine, go play baseball. You know, that's the way I feel about it, right? So I've been hesitating on this, but that being said, the Wrexham thing is real. Like, it is blown up. And it's not just because Ryan has been a part of it and Rob McElhenney has been a part of it. It's because they're winning. And Americans love a winner. And that's why this thing is blowing up. They are constantly getting promoted. It's been amazing. And they just got promoted again, which, I guess, spoiler alert, the end of season 3 is probably going to see them getting promoted. I mean, like, fuck, that's actually happened. It's not, you know what I'm saying? It's not spoiling it. They actually happened last week. They got in. So they're now up to the next division. They could be in the Premier League in 2 years, 2 or 3 years. If that happens, holy shit. Talk about the investment that Rob and Ryan made in this company. They are going to make money hand over fist if they get to the Premier League, considering how much they bought the club for. And we see more and more people. JJ Watt just invested in Burnley. More and more people investing in this Premier League. LeBron has part of Liverpool. So they're investing. They're seeing these clubs as investments. But what's great about this show and what you see in the scenes in the trailer is that, like, they have a connection to the fan base, and that's really important. And the fan base is getting kind of swept up and this whole Hollywood aspect to it all. And Wales is always, you know, Wales separate from England, separate from the Ireland and Scotland, but part of this whole area of the world there. So kind of staking their own claims. So I like it overall. I thought the trailer was really sweet. A little cheesy Ryan saying, you know, I thought we were going to change Wrexham, but Wrexham changed us. But, you know, it's what you say. It's what, like Homelander, the firefighters are our heroes. You know, it's what you say. So, yeah.
Mikey, the sports, the guys whose names start with R, what do you think?
Well, I guess I should go watch season one and season two at some point.
You didn't watch season one?
Or season two. I guess I should go watch it. There's three seasons out now, and Shannon sure does think it's a good show. I, you know, it's on my list, and I know that Shannon really does love it. He talks about it. He talks about it as much off of the podcast as he does on the podcast. So I know he's a big fan of it. I don't know if it's the sports of it all, but I just, every time I'm like, maybe, you know, this weekend, most of my plans got canceled because I'm recovering from getting food poisoning in Vancouver. So maybe it's a good weekend to sit down and start watching it. We'll see. But I know, here's what I will say. Right now, I'm kind of like that kid that's being told to eat his vegetables and refusing to eat his vegetables. I might not be a sports guy in real life, but you give me a sports TV show or a sports movie, and I'm always all in. I think it's great. And so that, I think that once I start watching it, it will be, it's going to be like how we keep trying to get John to watch Avatar The Last Airbender. I know that once I do it, I'm going to be like, I don't know why I waited. It's so great. And with season three coming out, maybe it's a good time to catch up. John, you already told me the end of season one and season two, and John just told me the end of season three, but I think I'll enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and as JNB said in the chat, lots of soccer players be handsome dudes that are in great shape.
Ah,
just saying.
Good points.
You know what? That might be the best reason of all.
Well, season three debuts on Hulu May 2nd, which is coincidentally also our Geek Buddies Disneyland trip. So we might not watch it the night of, but we're going to watch it soon. That brings us to our next trailer. And this is for a new series called Clipped. So a few years ago, the owner of the LA Clippers was this guy. It's Donald Sterling. Isn't that correct, Johnny?
Yeah, Don Sterling. Yeah, that guy.
Don Sterling, who was a bit of a character, Doc Rivers, who, used to coach the Orlando Magic, which, you know, I'm obviously a huge Indiana or huge Orlando Magic fan being from Florida. But Donald Sterling was caught on tape saying some very inappropriate things. And this is the show that is basically showing us what happened and the fallout of those terrible things that he said. We have Ed O'Neill playing Don Sterling, and we have Lawrence Fishburne playing Doc Rivers. I think this one looks pretty fantastic, and I actually got to audition. I was up for a role in this about a year ago. I didn't get it, so I don't want it to do too well.
You were good, but Ed O'Neill was a little bit better.
You know what? When you've headlined a few big series, he's got the leg up on me. But Johnny, what did you think of our first look at Clipped?
Oh, yeah. I was kind of hesitant to watch this one because I'm like, is this going to be one of those like fly-by-night type of series? But I liked this trailer. I really did because I liked Winning Time as well, the first two seasons on HBO. I dug that show. I thought it was great. I know some people come down on it in the second season. Kiss my ass. I enjoyed that fucking show. So this one, I was like, oh, is it going to do it justice? But yeah, man, they're exploring this thing. And listen, it's more, I initially looked at it as kind of a local thing. It's the Clippers. How many people know about this? But when you spread it out, it's a team owner who is saying racial stuff against Black players, against the people that work for him, and how he reacted to it. And it caused a seismic earthquake in the NBA because it forced owners to kick out one of their owners from the NBA. And that is unheard of in any American sports league, this idea of owners getting together, because they're all afraid that people will go back in their past, like we saw recently with Jerry Jones, and they found pictures of him yelling at young Black people in the 1950s with the segregation stuff in Arkansas. So all these owners fear their past being kind of brought up. So this tells you how the scandal was so big that it was affecting the product of the NBA so much that the other billionaire owners had to kick out one of their members from the club. But there's all this drama because he was cheating on his wife, and his wife had never divorced him and had stakes in the Clippers. And Jackie Weaver plays his wife. She's a great lover as an actress. So there's all these moving pieces. And then you have Doc Rivers, who was brought in to kind of be the traffic cop, in essence, and keep the players happy while also keeping Sterling away from the players. And as you saw from the in the trailer, there are going to be a lot of uncomfortable moments throughout this thing. So I hope it's a good series. This is a damn good trailer to get me excited to see it, man.
Mikey, another thing about the sports. What do you think? Are you in?
Well, so I'll be honest with you. As someone who doesn't know everything that happened in the sports, I saw that this was another one, and I'm like, God, these guys are just, it's not sports buddies, it's geek buddies. What are we doing? But then I watched the trailer, and I was like, oh, well, I'm into this. I mean, this is some shit. I mean, I do think that, like, it's a great, again, in the same, not in the same way, but in a similar way that Atlas telling this story about AI feels very of the moment. Look, in the past few years, particularly with everything that happened with George Floyd during the pandemic and all of that, like, this is a subject that we are all wrestling with on all levels of our culture. And, like, even the very fact that from a geek standpoint, every single movie or TV show that comes out gets accused of being too woke, too this, too that. Like, we are wrestling with this as a society. So this got real, real interesting real quick to me, because this is something, and I think, to John, to your point, this is something that transcends just sports. This is something that absolutely rocked the NBA. And if you are a fan of basketball and you are a fan of the sports, then this is going to be something that, like, is okay. You remember when this happened, this was big. But even if you're not, this is a story that is about something bigger than that, and with some amazing performances just based on the trailer. So yeah, this is one of those the sports things that I will certainly be watching.
Sports buddy.
The trailer for this, I mean, again, jokingly, like, I don't want the show to do that well because I didn't get it. Based off of the writing for the role that I went in for, which was a couple of different episodes, the writing's really good. And, it's really, really good. And obviously there's a little bit of sour grapes, because I really wanted it, because I could tell this is going to be something special. And based off of the trailer, it looks like they have kind of nailed it. So Clipped comes out, I believe it's June 4th. So in just a little bit here.
Can I throw something out there to
please
push a little bit? This is based on the podcast that Ramona Shelbourne from ESPN did on this situation. And I remember when this happened, it just occurred to me. I interviewed her at Collider for Collider Sports about this podcast when she started doing it, about Doc Rivers and about this Sterling stuff. What you think you know, there is so much more here. So I think that's what's going to be exciting, to see how much and the tentacles that this thing has. Because they didn't kick him out because he refused to apologize about the racist remarks. They kicked him out because it was affecting the money of the league. And advertisers were pulling themselves from the advertising. And LeBron got involved, other NBA players. So there's a big thing, as Michael said. This is actually much bigger than Winning Time. Winning Time was Lakers versus Celtics, East Coast versus West Coast. This is something that affects the entire league. So it's going to be a much more massive and interesting watch. For sure. And Ramona is an incredibly intelligent sports reporter. So I'm so looking forward to seeing this, man.
All right. June 4th on FX and Hulu. And so our last trailer, every once in a while, a trailer comes along that the moment it starts, you're like, all right, in about 90 seconds, I'm going to have tears rolling down my face. And that is the case with this one. This is called Jim Henson Idea Man. So this is a documentary that's going to be on Disney Plus, directed by Ron Howard, has a lot of interviews, has a lot of stock footage of Jim Henson, goes through his creation of the Muppets, the Dark Crystal. They have interviews with Brian Henson, with Frank Oz. It's just the type of thing that immediately tugs at your heartstrings. And I remember watching it that morning being like, oh boy, there's not going to be a dry eye on our text thread once everybody watches this trailer. But Mikey, let's start with you as the biggest fan of Kermit of the three of us. What did you think of our first look at Jim Henson Idea Man?
Look, I mean, growing up, when I was growing up and becoming the geek that I am today, there were three heroes that I have more than anybody else. It was Walt Disney, Steven Spielberg, and Jim Henson. Ooh. Like, Jim Henson to me is one of the absolute greats, and what he did is one of the most amazing. Like what I would say, I was just talking about this morning with somebody, that there are certain people that come along and are great at a pre-existing craft. Like, you come in and you're a great basketball player, you're a great director, or you're a great actor, or whatever you want. Then there are some people that come in and are great at something that didn't exist before they existed. Not that Jim Henson created puppetry. I mean, obviously the art of puppetry, marionettes, that all obviously existed before him. But the Muppets, Fraggle Rock, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, the Jim Henson Creature Shop. Like, you know, this is the guy. Like, Yoda wouldn't exist without Kermit. Like, there is just this whole world of a specific kind of puppetry and performance that before he came along, it just, we had never seen anything like it before. And having been of the age that I grew up during all of it, like, it was absolutely amazing what this one man did for the world. And so, yeah, seeing this documentary, seeing that Ron Howard is behind it, like, so you know that it's like, this isn't just something that was just put together. Like, you know, you really feel like this is something that was built with care. Super, super excited. Like, literally any documentary, anything that deals with the Muppets, Sesame Street, Jim Henson, anything of that, I'm all in. And this looks like it's going to be a really, really good and comprehensive one. So I am 100% in on this. And yes, I am sure that I will get teared up watching it.
Johnny, did you cry during the trailer?
Yeah, I don't. How can I say this? I don't have the, like, overwhelming love for Jim Henson that other people do, and I totally respect and admire that. Certainly Michael has spoken about that connection. I love the Muppet movie, but you know, I've maybe, you can count on one hand or two hands how many times I've seen any of the other Muppet movies, so I'm not necessarily drawn to it. But the energy of Jim Henson and the positivity and what he was trying to create, what he was trying to do, I think is an incredible thing and a wonderful story. And the fact that they're doing a documentary about this and hopefully really capturing the essence of who he was and how he affected people and how his work has echoed and resonated even into 2024. There's still this idea of Muppets and this idea of what he represents and the tragedy of his death. I mean, such an avoidable death, yet it kind of adds to the legend of Jim Henson and the tragic nature of it, which makes you appreciate the time you did have with him even more. And I think this trailer does an excellent job of going through the different stages of his life and giving us a good background of what we're going to be experiencing in this particular documentary. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this one.
Yeah. This documentary is the type of thing that I feel like streaming does really, really well.
Yeah.
There are a lot of peaks and valleys with the world of streaming and the way it has affected the entertainment industry. But this is definitely one of the peaks, because this is the type of thing that would have gotten made. Would it have made it to theaters? Maybe. You know, the movie going public by and large in the U.S. at least, the documentary has to be like big to get one of those, you know, really wide releases. Yeah. So the fact that this is going to be on Disney Plus is going to be so accessible to people, it really, again, it's one of the good examples of what streaming has done. Because again, he was 57, I think, when he passed. I mean, he was considering, like, he was very, very young. But he's one of those guys that I can't wait to watch this. And it is going to be coming out on May 31st, in just a couple of weeks or about a month.
He was 53, which makes it almost
53. Yeah. Gosh.
But imagine, wow. You know, it makes me feel shitty is think how much he did by the time he was 53. And then I'm sitting here with my food poisoning, figuring out what I'm going to do this weekend. I'm like, I got to get moving.
Not only that, but you're literally wearing a shirt that says, I've got a bad feeling about this.
I got a bad feeling about this weekend, guys. I got a bad feeling. Here's a question. Yeah. If the Muppets were hosting the Geek Buddies instead of us, which Muppet would be which of us?
Oh, you know what?
Oh my gosh.
Oh god. Look at him setting himself up to kiss his own ass. Listen to this.
What? No, I'm not. You're honestly curious. That's a question for the chat. It's a question for the chat. The Geek Buddies as the Muppets. Go.
I like that idea, actually. I like that idea. let us know down there. Who do you in the chat? Who is which Muppet are each of us? And maybe even which Muppet is has been our guest. Like, which Muppet is Kalinowski? Which Muppet is Emma Fife? Which Muppet is Laura Kelly? That could be kind of as we go along.
I like that. And Emma's obviously Janice.
I love that idea. I love that idea.
We literally got three in a row. Says Rocha is Animal, Rocha is Gonzo, Rocha is Oscar, Rocha is Sam the Eagle. Like, literally four in a row.
Sam the Eagle, I like that idea.
I have literally said John is Sam the Eagle for years.
We have to do the show. Yeah, I like
Sam. The best. I just got, we got a Mike is Kermit and a Mike is Miss Piggy, which I'll take either one of them. And Shannon being Fozzie, I think there's no better answer. I don't know. Unless, Shannon as Elmo was a pretty good one.
I love it. Oh, man. So when is this coming out, Shannon? When does Idea Man come out?
May 31st on Disney Plus. Ooh.
All right. So it's coming close. All right. I got to check my screener. Maybe it's already there. All right. Let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll talk some really uncomfortable shit from a place called Baby Reindeer. And we'll be right. Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertips. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, BUDDIES. Simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Back right after this.
Do 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 do.
Wow. All right, let's talk about it. Mikey, do you want to do this one? Do you want me to do this one? What are we doing with Baby Reindeer? All right, fine. Here it goes. Baby Reindeer, there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not watched Baby Reindeer, you are missing out on one of the most unsettling, well-written, incredibly well-acted, emotionally exhausting and engrossing shows that I've ever seen. It's seven episodes. Each of them are around 30 to 35 minutes. I think one's around 40 minutes. And it is basically the true story, well, based on true events, shall I say, of this comedian slash actor, Richard Gadd, who is the lead of this particular show. So it's based on his own personal experience with a stalker. The stalker is played by Jessica Gunning, who I know from Law & Order UK, but it was great to see her playing Martha in this. And he also explores his relationship with a transsexual woman played by actress Nava Mao, actress, writer, director Nava Mao, and his experiences throughout this situation. And there are so many twists and turns here, so many emotional journeys that you're going on with Richard. And you yourself, as you're watching this, are caught up in this and are going through your own emotional journey as you're watching this. Episode four is one of the most honest and brutal episodes and raw episodes I've ever seen about a certain situation. We don't want to spoil it here. And then episode six is one of the greatest monologues I've ever seen done on any show, streaming or otherwise. So, gentlemen, and Michael, I go to you first, man. Your thoughts on Baby Reindeer? Have you recovered? And what's your overall feeling on this show? And do you understand why it's becoming a pop culture phenomenon?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we all crave anything that's unique. You know, we complain about this all the time. And it comes up all the time with Marvel. Oh, Marvel movies. It's just, this feels like another superheroes movie. It's that typical Marvel third act scene. Star Wars, this just feels like a reboot of what we've already seen. Like, we always are complaining that things don't feel new and fresh. So when something comes along, regardless of genre, that has that feeling of authenticity, uniqueness, honesty, and truth, like, people gravitate towards it. And so for me, it started happening early last week. I started getting text messages from friends or people on Twitter being like, dude, have you watched Baby Reindeer yet? Oh my gosh, Baby Reindeer. Have you watched Baby Reindeer? And so last Monday night, I was like, I better start this thing. And we were all on a text chain with our friend Jonathan. And I said, oh, I just finished the first two episodes. And Jonathan was like, you're going to finish it tonight. And I'm like, I'm not finishing it tonight. It's seven episodes. There's no, I'm going to watch a couple more, and I'll watch the rest later this week. And I texted 3 hours later and said, so I finished all the episodes. I tore through it all in one sitting. Like, I kept telling myself after this episode, I'm going to stop. I would get to the end and I'm like, okay, well, I'm clearly not. We're just going to keep doing this. It's really, really amazing. So yeah, Richard Gadd, the comedian, he did a one-man show based on his experiences. And then based on the one-man show, developed this series. And so he's the lead. He is the creator, the writer, and he's also the person who experienced a lot of this. Yeah. And right now, a lot of people are trying to kind of play amateur sleuth and like look back at his life and figure out, who was this person? Was this person real? Did he really date someone like this? And he's kind of said to people, please stop doing that. I don't want people trying to figure out what the truth was. I want people to just experience this for what it is. And I think, again, without getting into spoilers, on the surface of it, and this is literally what I knew going into it, so I don't feel like this is a spoiler. It's like, hey, there's a comedian. He's working in a bar. He's nice to somebody, and that person becomes obsessed with him. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what you go in kind of knowing. And that's literally what you get maybe in the first 5 minutes of the series. And where it goes from there, and the way it deals with mental health, the way we connect with people, the way we communicate with people, the whole idea that you don't really know what someone is really dealing with when you just meet. Like, there's a whole host of things that it deals with in kind of the most fascinating yet the most uncomfortable way possible. Like, you're going to spend the majority of watching Baby Reindeer in a high state of uncomfortability and stress. Like, you are just sort of sitting there like, oh God, oh God. But it's fascinating. And when you get to the end of it, it's one of those things that I'm trying to think of the right way to put it, but you get to the end of this series, as particularly like the last 10 or 15 minutes of the final episode, and you kind of sit there and it just really makes you sit for a few minutes and just reflect on things and think about things and in a really in a way that I haven't quite experienced before. And so, yeah, to me, and John is absolutely right, episode four is extremely intense. Episode six has a monologue for the ages. And it's just, it's not anything that you expect, and it's not quite like anything you've seen.
Yeah. Shannon, your thoughts on this overall?
Yeah, I had seen a couple of like glimpses of trailers. I never actively sought this trailer out and watched it from beginning to end. I would see a little bit here, a little bit there, and just that there was sort of a general buzz around it. And I was like, I'll get to it when I get to it. It was on our thread with Jonathan, with Gabe, when he said, this show, I think this is going to be a thing. And so I had said to my wife, like, why don't we watch this first episode? And we ended up watching the first three, like as Vogel was diving into the entirety of the series, I was like, all right, we have to go to bed. We'll watch the next four tomorrow. There are moments in stories that can take the audience out because something that a character does is kind of so unbelievable. With this, even though some of the choices that are being made are not things I would do, there are moments that I'm like, oh, really? Well, you know who would have done that? This person from my past. This person would have done that. Like you, the relatability with what the characters go through is kind of frightening. Episode four, there is a disclaimer at the beginning. So if you have had certain experiences in the past, you know, going in, this is what this episode is going to deal with. You got to skip it. But it's just so well done. And the thing about it is that there is so much, I'm plugging my computer in. There is so much, it is a true black comedy. Like it is a dark comedy because dealing with all of the more disturbing elements, there are still moments that make you double over and crack up. And it is just, again, it's just one of those things. Like I'm really curious what's going to happen in the next few weeks, because this is one of those shows that could become, I don't think it's there yet, but I think it could become one of those kind of cultural touchstones. Like I was talking about my sister, talking about it with my sister who lives in Arizona. And I was kind of like, have you heard of this? Has this made it out to you? And, the Arizona community, at least where she lives, is a little different than where we live. She's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I kind of touch on it. I'm like, I don't know if you will like this, but here is kind of the gist. Yeah. And she's like, I'm kind of intrigued, but at the same time, yeah, that might be too much. And there is going to be a segment of the audience that is like, this is too much. But that being said, in terms of the execution of the story, man, it's really well done. And I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because from a traditional storytelling standpoint, the way things conclude, there's going to be some folks like, this is not satisfying. Like this is not an end. This like, wait, what next? Why? And there are days that I'm like, nope, that is exactly how it was supposed to end. And there are other days that I'm like, man, come on.
Really?
You gotta give us a little more.
Really?
And maybe that's me being a greedy audience member.
Ladies and gentlemen, Shannon and I are gonna be having a discussion after this show where we're not gonna spoil anything in front of you, but we're gonna be talking.
But that being said, this is like if you are a fan of complex storytelling, this is a complex story.
Yeah, I think that's what I found to be the most interesting thing about the show. Yes, it's about stalking, but it's about so much more. As Michael said, that's just the first 5 minutes laying the foundation and the groundwork. It's the actors here. Richard Gadd, Martha Gunning, and I forget her name again. Sorry. Jessica Gunning, rather. Inaba Mao. They do so much to flesh out the three-dimensionality of these characters. It could have easily slid into one-dimensional, two-dimensional characters navigating the situation with some jokes thrown in to alleviate some of the tension for the audience. But there is so much that is being asked of you when you're watching this show. And guess what? Some shows are okay to ask questions of you, to ask of you an emotional thing. And you can get mad at the main characters. And I think this is great about the show, too, is like there are moments you're like, why are you doing this? And then you find out the backstory and you find out what's going on. And so for you as a viewer, you're like, oh, wow, I really was ready to feel this way about the situation or judge it in a certain way. And then when you see the backstory, it challenges you to put the behavior in context from everybody, including the stalker. And I think that's what's fascinating. It's such a gutsy exploration and a human and complex exploration of a situation like this without like trying to excuse anything. It's more about like, what's this like from a bigger picture point of view and a micro point of view? And although what she's doing is wrong and clearly wrong, you look at the behind the scenes of all of this and for all of them, what's going on for them. And I just found that to be so brilliant and gutsy at the end of the day. And so for all the bashing of streaming people do and all this kind of stuff, there are some really phenomenal content that might not have made it to any other service if it weren't for some of these streaming services. And I wonder, maybe Max would take a chance on a show like this. But I'm so glad that Netflix put it together and put it out. And this is one of those ones that is built for a binge, in my opinion.
Well, oh, clearly. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What about the, what did you guys think of the acting, the direction here, the way this all went down? Any thoughts on the performances here and how they were able to bring these characters to life?
Go ahead. It felt like there is a narration that happens.
Yes.
Not a spoiler. But besides the narration, there are moments that you feel like, or rather I felt like that, like this could be a documentary. Mm. There happened to be a camera during this incredibly awkward, intense exchange. That's how believable and authentic I found those performances to be. Mm. And also the two actors who play the lead's parents.
Oh, man.
Stellar. Oh, just stellar.
Yeah. Mike, what did you think about the performances?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think everything about this feels very raw, including the performances. I mean, I think that's part of what makes it feel authentic is it definitely has that almost down and dirty, like bare bones style of filmmaking that makes it feel like you're really kind of living it. It's part of what makes it so uncomfortable. So yeah, I mean, it's just great all around. And I think like to the point of what you said, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that are really bad about the way streaming came along and sort of upset the entire ecosystem of home entertainment. Yeah. But part of the competition of streaming means they take chances on certain things. And this definitely feels like one that was like, let's take a chance on this. Like this Baby Reindeer hasn't been something that's been hugely promoted. I didn't see a trailer for it. I didn't see a billboard for it. I literally just heard about it from people being like, holy shit, have you watched this? And so I think it's one of those, I could be wrong, but it feels like it's one of those things that as it sort of gains momentum is going to be even a surprise to Netflix. This wasn't one of the things that they were out there being like, everybody got to check this out. It sort of just snuck up on me. And I feel like it might've snuck up on them as well.
Yeah. Jeff Snyder on the Hot Mic was the first one to mention it a couple of weeks ago to me. And I was like, I haven't heard of this thing. Right. And then our text chain and Thread was the one with JG is the one that got me to take a chance. And I'll tell you this, watching it with the Lady Outlaw, like seeing a woman's point of view and a woman who's experienced stalking, hearing their point of view as your, because I've never experienced it, no one wants to stalk me. Hearing their point of view, well, never mind. You know the text chain. Hearing their point of view, watching this show, I thought was fascinating for me as a man, seeing how she was perceiving things and how she was seeing things. And yes, after episode four, she refused to go any further for like a day because it was so harrowing. And so I found that to be another element that helped me to really enjoy the show, and that the show was working, that they were succeeding in what they were trying to do, which was to show you the reality of this, but also challenge you to look at it in a much more complex lens. And I thought that was great. Yeah.
I had a stalker once. Shannon defended me.
Oh, Yeah.
Shannon screamed at my stalker in a Starbucks in West Hollywood. He was my hero.
Wow.
He said, "You get out of here."
That is how I did it. Yep. As unintimidating.
Hey, you. Get your damn hands off him.
Why, I ought to. Michael let my stalker kiss me. So I don't know. I don't know if he's the best wingman. There in London when the Scottish girl attacked me in there. But, you know, it's the way it goes. It's the way it goes.
You want to tell stories about London and who let people into our flat?
Oh, I don't recall that, Your Honor. I don't recall that at all, Your Honor. About a couple from Nebraska or Wisconsin. I don't remember, but yeah.
There was.
Anyway.
Right before I started dating my wife, like I was doing the app dating in the wake of my first marriage kind of, you know, ending. And there was a gal, like there was a moment, like we had had a pleasant conversation over the app. We had chatted on the phone. I'm like, oh, she is really, really charming. And then we met for one date and I'm like, oh, you might be a little, I was definitely getting that stalkery vibe. And we had drinks and the whole time I'm like, I gotta get out of here. And then I had enough drinks. I'm like, maybe I'm being a bit of a snoot right now. Maybe I need to not be so high up on my high horse right now. And as the date continued and the booze wore off, I'm like, nope. I was right the first time. I gotta get the hell out of here. And I mean, she reached out for weeks after I had it very clearly explained, like, hey, this is not going to be a thing. Like,
right.
And she months after, like, I had blocked her number. I didn't realize or I didn't know that on the iPhone, if you block someone, they can still leave you a voicemail. And under deleted messages at the bottom of your voicemails, there's a section for block messages. Oh. So you can hear what they're leaving you. but yeah, I'm like, there was definitely a moment where I'm like, oh, if this keeps going, like she's going to go full tilt. And thankfully, after about 6 months, the messages stopped.
But, you know, we were each talking about one incident, right? Can you imagine? And mine wasn't really that. And can you imagine what women go through? And this is what I think is important about watching this show is, like, if you're a man watching the show, this is something women experience multiple times in their lives. And this is, I think the show really kind of wakes you up to what this situation actually is like, what a grooming situation is like. Because so many people are like, well, why did they wait so long? Why did they do this? Why did they do that? To live in their sanctimony. And this show really kind of shatters all of that and causes you to look at it in a different way if you're open to the messages that they're trying to get across to you, which I think is phenomenal. You know?
And in the chat, Major Lazor, I did not hit it. So just to be clear, I did not hit it. Therefore,
Major, this is not.
I did quit it, but I did not hit it.
The sun's still out, Major. You keep that for the nighttime. all right. Anything more you want to say on this, guys, or shall we take a break?
Let's take a break.
I think we're taking a break.
Take a break, and save the rest for Geek Buddies After Dark.
go. We're going to take a shower for about 10 seconds, not together, and then we'll be right back right after this. All right, let's hit some of these Streamlabs before we jump into our main topic. Not all of them, but just some of them. Want to hit some of them as we start off here. Aaron says, hey guys, love the show. I've suggested the show many times to Taskmaster on YouTube. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I've suggested this show many times, Taskmaster on YouTube. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I don't know what Taskmaster is. Do you guys know what Taskmaster is?
It's a villain in the Marvel universe.
I don't know what this is. Oh, is it a show? The British show? Okay. Well, if it's the British show, I guess that's interesting. Or yeah, but yeah, no, I've never watched Taskmaster.
All right, I gotta check it out.
Yeah. All right, Cowboys Fan 92 says, evening, Roke. I was wondering if you three would try to do a live X-Men 97 finale review and recap with us all live when it drops. I don't know, maybe, gentlemen. What are your thoughts on that?
on that Wednesday. When
there's three episodes left, right?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, 8, 9, 10.
So that I'm just trying to figure out when that would be. So that what is that, May 15th?
Probably, yeah.
Maybe? Yeah, possibly.
Maybe. We'll say maybe. We'll say maybe. So we'll keep it under advisement, is what I would say. But thanks, you Cowboys fan. All right, Francisco Lopez says, Wolverine has always been my favorite X-Men character, but while watching 97 and watching the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, it makes me think about how the MCU's X-Men will be. I really want the MCU's X-Men to feel more like Assemble slash family. I always felt like the Fox version was Wolverine was the centerpiece and that the X-Men and feel the other members didn't show. Okay, so was the centerpiece of the X-Men and feel like the other members didn't get a chance to sign. Yeah, that's a complaint that you've seen people talk about in reviewing X-Men 97, that they're happy. Well, not complaint, but their observation that they're happy that Wolverine has kind of taken a little bit of a backseat and all the other characters are getting a chance to shine in a way that they didn't in the live action version. What do you think about these comments from Francisco Lopez, guys?
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, yeah. After Hugh Jackman's incredible performance over 10 movies,
yeah,
maybe more, mm-hmm. I think focusing on the ensemble, which is what the series has done, was definitely the right move, because yeah. It's not like Wolverine has disappeared. He is very much there and he has some big moments. But they're all kind of being parsed out, not equally, but they are being parsed out where you have a Jubilee moment, you have a Wolverine moment. I like that the one that they're focusing on right now is Cyclops. Because that is a character who, with the big screen adaptations, has famously kind of been underused. And this is a very interesting character. And the fact that he's getting some love in this series, I think, is great.
Yeah. Michael, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, look, the same thing in the movies happened in the comics. I mean, it wasn't just the movies that did this. Like when Wolverine came along in the comics, he took off to such a degree that all of a sudden Wolverine was in 35 different comics in the Marvel universe. I mean, there was so much Wolverine everywhere. And, you know, in the world of comics, there was still plenty of room for everybody else to shine. But Wolverine definitely is one of those characters that can become really overpowering really quickly. And I think for better or for worse, I mean, look, Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine is excellent. And it got us Logan and it got a lot of great things. And I think the excitement of seeing him be Wolverine one more time in Deadpool 3 is one of the things that people are most excited about that movie. Like, he is great at being the movie version of Logan. But, you know, it did cause sort of a shift in that family feel of the X-Men. And there is something refreshing with X-Men 97 of seeing him sort of just be part of an ensemble, because it does allow the others to shine. I mean, you know, Scott Summers has gotten it so bad. Scott Summers gets it bad the same way that Steve Rogers used to get it bad and Superman gets it bad. Like, whenever you have a character that doesn't have a ton of angst and doesn't have a lot of any character that under any category gets classified as a Boy Scout, Hollywood goes, well, we don't know what to do with that.
Yeah,
I don't know. That person's not interesting. So you got Batman, you're like, oh yeah, this is great. There's a lot of pathos here. You got Wolverine, you're like, yeah, I love this. And you get Scott Summers and you're like, well, he must not be interesting. We shouldn't do much with him. And I think X-Men 97 has shown that, no, there's plenty that you can do. So yeah, I think the way they're doing it is great. And I do think, you know, Marvel reads everything online that everybody's writing as much as anybody else does. And I think that Marvel, as we said, is wrestling right now with X-Men 97 being such a smash hit and having a showrunner that is talking a lot about the show on Twitter, but is no longer the showrunner of that show. So that's something they're wrestling with. But I think they're also wrestling with knowing that where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is right now, and knowing that we are all anxiously awaiting the live action X-Men, but that we are currently watching one of the greatest X-Men stories ever unfold in animation. They're like, they've caused their own problem, is that they are going to be a tough act to follow after the act that they are currently giving us.
Yeah, fair points. And speaking of which, we should move on to our Marvel section here. We'll come back to your Streamlabs and Super Chats at the end of the show. So keep sending them in as we go along, sending your support as we go along here. The address is pinned in the chat and description of the video as well. But we should jump into what is now our Marvel Roundup. This is our main topic here. Michael, I think you're kicking things off here with X-Men 97. So take it away. What do we got to know?
I am. Well, as I was saying, although Beau DeMaio is no longer the showrunner on X-Men 97, and I think that Marvel is currently looking for the person that is going to pick things up after season two, because Beau DeMaio wrote season one and season two, whoever they hire is going to have a tough act to follow. But Beau DeMaio is still talking about the show on Twitter. And one of the things that he did say this week is that after the events of the past week's episode, people might want to go back to the original X-Men series and check out the episodes One Man's Worth Part 1 and One Man's Worth Part 2, because they may be pertinent to what is going to be happening in episodes 8, 9, and 10. Now, One Man's Worth Part 1 and 2 is kind of like the X-Men version of Terminator a little bit. Bishop and Shard, who is a character that we saw briefly in episode 3 when Bishop was having his visions when Madeline Pryor took over the mansion. Shard is Bishop's sister from the future. In One Man's Worth, Bishop and Shard go to an alternate present where Storm and Magneto are fighting a mutant battle with Magneto and are married, gets them and says, to prevent the future that is going to happen, we need to stop Professor X from getting killed. And they go back to the 50s and have to stop Professor X getting killed by a time-traveling mutant who was sent there by Master Mold and Nimrod. And as we have already seen from last week's episode, I don't know if we're going to, can I spoil last week's episode now as we're talking?
I think so. Yeah.
If you don't want to hear this, fast forward me. But in last week's episode, in episode 7 of X-Men 97, we learned that Bastion was the big bad of the season. Mm-hmm. And Bastion in the comics is a character that is a synthesis of Master Mold and Nimrod, who is a sentinel robot killer from the future. So the fact that X-Men, the classic X-Men series, had a episode where a Nimrod and a Master Mold from the future were sending people back to kill Professor X, and we now have Bastion in X-Men 97, it does feel like those episodes are going to be some kind of a tie into the origin story of how Bastion came to be in this series.
Strong stuff. I mean, is this a way to get people to go back and revisit the entire series? Was Beau maybe pushing people in that direction? Like, what do you take from his active nature on Twitter since this show's been kind of hitting a pop culture buzz point, so to speak?
Well, so two things. On to your second point, he was pretty silent about the show until you hit episode 5.
Yeah.
And when the Genosha episode happened, that's when he started tweeting, and he pretty much hasn't stopped since then. I think what it really says is, despite the way they parted ways and despite the fact that we're probably never going to find out exactly what went down, he's very proud of the show that he made.
Yeah.
He clearly loves the X-Men. He's clearly very proud of the show he made. And any creator would be thrilled to be getting this kind of viewer engagement and this kind of response to a show that you put out there. So I don't think it's surprising that he is out there responding to things. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we're going to talk right now about, in a minute, about what Sean Levy said about Deadpool and Wolverine. But we are living in this interesting time where when the Marvel Cinematic Universe was really at its peak, people loved the fact that they had to go back and watch things. Like, okay, so if I'm going to go see this movie, what do I have to watch? And people kind of loved doing the homework. And we've now gotten to a point with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and some other big brands where people are like, I don't want to have to watch 18 shows to watch this thing. Like, what do I – like, I don't – this feels like homework. It feels like work. It doesn't feel like I'm enjoying it. So we've reached this point where doing the homework to most your average viewer doesn't feel as exciting as it used to. Yeah. And so with X-Men 97 thus far, it seems like it's walked that really nice balance of – if you did watch the whole series as a kid, if you do remember the 90s series, this links up and everything makes sense and it still feels like a continuation. But if, like John, you had not really watched the 90s series, you don't know much about it, it still feels like you get all the information you need. So with Beau kind of putting that out there, hey, watch these two episodes, it's going to be interesting to come to that next week and go, well, did I need to have seen those, or was that a nice to have seen? Are people going to be confused? So it's going to be interesting to see how deep into the lore it gets.
What do you think of this, Shannon?
I think if the former showrunner is coming out saying it would help if you were aware of this story, I think it's probably absolutely pertinent. Because my guess is that if you have never heard of the X-Men, you don't know who Cyclops is, or Professor X, or Magneto, or Wolverine. My guess is that X-Men 97 is not the first thing that you're going to dive into. So the fact that, like I know all the characters. I'm like you, John. Like, I saw a couple of episodes of the original animated series, but I know enough about the individual characters and their dynamics with other characters. I'm kind of like, okay, you might throw out some names I may not be familiar with, but overall, I'm going to understand the players that are involved. Again, if the showrunner who has crafted this, one of the better X-Men stories in recent history, if the guy is saying you should have some familiarity with this 44 minutes of storytelling, it sounds like it's probably a good thing to do.
Yeah, and Kofi Outlaw, who wrote this write-up on Comic Book, I like Kofi and his writing. He says that, you know, if Bo DeMeo's hint is on point, we'll probably see a couple of failed attempts to defeat Bastion along the way and some iconic X-Men alternate realities as Easter egg nods to hardcore fans. And certainly, Michael and Shannon, they have not shied away from making these, like, hardcore nods to certain things in the comics or certain storylines that have been in the animated series. They have not shied away from that and yet made it organically work in the shows as they've constructed it. And we're now going to go like way out there with future timelines and alternate realities and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see where this leads to. And I guess watching One Man's Worth, I guess it sounds like he's hinting, and I may be off on this, that this is a continuation of that storyline. And maybe saying get some foundation here, and then you'll even have more of appreciation for what we're going to do in these last three episodes. At least that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, if knowing that there was a timeline where a Master Mold and a Nimrod had basically killed all were in the process of killing all mutants, and building an army of super super strong Sentinels, and we now have Bolivar Trask having built some hybrid Sentinels and being turned into a hybrid Sentinel himself. It's like, I think it might be ultimately one of those time loops where Bastion is creating a timeline that will create a Nimrod and a Master Mold that they can come back and create Bastion. So you're getting into that real timey-wimey weird shit.
There we go. All right. Anything more to say on this mic, or shall we move on with our Marvel roundup?
Let's move on to Marvel roundup.
Okay. Let's get into some Blade situation here. This is coming to us from comicbook.com. You know what Blade said. Some mofos are always trying to ice skate uphill. but according to Daniel Rickman, Daniel RPK there, the New Jack City star, that is Wesley Snipes, will reprise his role as Blade in the Multiverse Saga and has, quote, already signed to do some stuff there. This would be really interesting. Because Snipes in 2022, talking to comicbook.com, said, never say never. Long as I'm healthy and in shape, I can rock with them, man. Yeah, as far as my predictions on if something like that happened in the future, I don't know. It seems to me if it would have happened, it would have happened already. But hey, never say never. No, Marvel Studios has not approached me as of yet. I'm still working on my acting skills. So when I come up as an actor, maybe they'll reach out and say, let's have a conversation. Or maybe they don't feel I'm an ensemble player. I mean, Wesley, when he was doing this, was, not a fan of sharing the screen, as we saw in Blade Trinity with Ryan Reynolds and Jessica. I forget her last name. Beale, right. Yeah, so there were issues there, certainly with Blade Trinity, and Wesley made this role his own, and a lot of people feel that he never got the credit he deserved for being one of these people in the 90s, along with The Crow, that kind of got people into seeing the possibility of success with superhero movies. Those first two Blades, a lot of people love those first two Blades. Guillermo doing the second one, Norrington doing the first one. So the idea of Blade showing up here with all, I mean, this production of Blade is nearing Gambit / Flash levels of the kind of rewrites and changes and different directors and different points of view. And it seems like what we're hearing now is that they're stripping Blade down to just be a very grounded, him fighting vampires type thing. So does this excite you guys that the possibility that Wesley Snipes could be back in the fold here as maybe an older Blade? Is he passing this on? Is this a future alternate reality? And he said some stuff there is what Daniel Rickman said. So could we see him in Secret Wars? Your thoughts?
I mean, whatever Secret Wars becomes,
right.
I feel like in terms of speculation, it is reaching those early Multiverse of Madness levels that Tom Cruise is going to be supreme Iron Man, like all of these, you know, very kind of, you know, wild predictions. And maybe, but it's like you're taking an actor from a trilogy from over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And the last entry into that trilogy didn't go out with a bang.
Right.
Potentially putting him into an ensemble that has no knowledge of him. It seems like a lot of heavy lifting for a story that already is potentially complicated.
Hmm.
In terms of like Wesley Snipes, when he did Blade in 98, I think it was.
Yeah.
He was kind of on the descent already. Like when you look at the big movies that he was in with, you know, Passenger 57 and White Men Can't Jump. I mean, he peaked. Mm. Blade is what kind of kept him afloat for a couple of years. But if you look whatever he did around Blade, I mean, I don't remember it. So the idea that he's potentially coming back in some multiversal form, for me, that's not exciting.
Okay.
Despite enjoying the first movie, I mean, the second movie when he suplexes a vampire, I was like, okay. So that's not particularly exciting for me, but I do know that there is a very loyal Wesley Snipes' Blade fan base out there. I just don't understand how you work that into the current MCU.
Yeah, Mike, what are your thoughts on this? Shannon's right. Like around 90 to 95 is like the sweet spot for Wesley Snipes. And then it becomes a little bit of a law of diminishing returns. And then he gets U.S. Marshals, which is a nice sequel to The Fugitive. Then you have Blade, but then Blade 2. But then it's, as Shannon says, littered with stuff that really didn't take off or become successful. And Wesley kind of descends and then pops up again years later after the tax issues with Dolomite. And does a really good job. And certainly people have come back around to reappreciate Wesley and having him back in our lives. And he's almost, I think he is almost 60 or 60 already. So what are your thoughts on this? Does this excite you having him back? I mean, he did a cameo in What We Do in the Shadows, which I thought was really funny as Blade. So yeah. What are your thoughts on him coming back here to do the role?
I mean, look, it's hard to say because the rumors say, you know, the rumors, what they say specifically in the multiverse, what was the specific?
He was back in the movie and then some stuff. Yeah.
So like, if they were like, fuck it, we're going to do a Blade movie and it's going to be Wesley Snipes. Like if Blade was just going to be Wesley Snipes in the MCU.
Right.
And we're not doing a Blade from the multiverse shows up or anything else. Like we're going to sort of do a hard Blade reboot, but it's going to be Wesley Snipes.
Hmm.
We're just going to do an older guy as our vampire because we know this is somebody. Kind of. Yeah. If you were going to do that, I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, I'm on board. I think there is enough of a love for the first two Blade movies. There would be some excitement about that. And, like, that could be a thing. But if they're going to do, we're still doing Mahershala Ali in this Blade movie that we're still trying to figure out, but we are going to have Wesley Snipes pop up in Secret Wars. I'm kind of with Shannon. It's like, well, okay, so what? Like, I think that there's this idea that mm-hmm. Secret Wars is going to somehow be the last 45 minutes of Avengers Endgame on steroids. That like anyone who ever played a Marvel character anywhere is going to just come through a portal and that we're all going to scream like we did in the theater. But the only reason we all screamed in the theater was because those characters actually meant something. Like if everyone just starts popping up, it becomes the end of The Flash where you just had a bunch of characters on spinning wheels going, I don't give a shit about this. Like, so what? Oh, it's Nicolas Cage. Cool. So like, you know, I think Shannon is right that we're sort of like the speculation is running wild. Like I think that and again, it seems like they just can't. When you come out saying they finally figured out that Marvel finally figured out that with Blade, they're going to have him fight vampires. You're like, well, what the fuck were you doing before? Like, what other shit did you have going on in there? But it's like, if you were going to have Mahershala Ali as Blade, and you somehow created like a really great role for Wesley Snipes in some way in this movie to sort of honor what he had done, that's 1,000% yes. But it just, you know, I think that, yeah, it's the more that I hear about certain things happening, the more I fear that we're going down the road of the ending of the Flash, what DC thought they had versus what we saw. It's like, okay, I don't want to see that again.
Would you see him in Deadpool and Wolverine as a variant? Remember, there's rumors that there are going to be variants from the TVA in Deadpool and Wolverine. Would that be a way to maybe soft launch him into the MCU? And would he be like the older version of Mahershala Ali? I mean, like would that? Yeah.
So just you asked two questions. So I'm going to answer them in two ways.
Sorry, yes, please answer.
Because the answer to question number one, if he shows up in Deadpool as a variant and Wesley Snipes is there in Blade, do I like that idea? Sure, because it's a fucking comedy. That to me is the same as Blade showing up in What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah,
that's
right.
There
yeah.
as a bit, and it's I can laugh bit. At it, and that's great. Don't use Deadpool to soft launch anything. Deadpool is a comedy. It is making fun of things. It breaks the fourth wall. It doesn't obey the rules that other movies have to obey. It gets to do its own thing because it's Deadpool. If Blade shows up in that as a fun one-off joke, and then he shows up somewhere else, like, oh yeah, remember from Deadpool? I'm like, no. You don't get to do that.
wasn't that under the Fox universe, or is that a different
story? That was New Line, which is Warner Brothers.
Right. So okay, that's interesting. Yes, Wes, Blade was in Eternals, the voice was in Eternals, but that's like saying Joker was in the Batman because Barry Keoghan had a deleted scene. Yeah, we heard his voice.
No,
he pops up at the end of the movie.
Like, you don't see him though, you just hear it.
No,
you see him ish,
but it is, but it was clearly, no, it's not the same as the deleted scene of Joker. I mean, look, Eternals, as we've talked about, is a whole other issue because I think that they thought it was going to be one thing, and now Bob Iger's like, don't make Eternals 2, and Kevin Feige's like, but I want to make Eternals 2, and everyone's arguing over it. But we actually did hear a voice that was confirmed to be Blade that was supposed to go down a road, but it might be one of those ending credit sequences that doesn't get to go anywhere because they're running into so many problems, but we'll see.
Yeah, Black Knight was supposed to be in Blade, if I'm remembering correctly.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I do think, I mean, as much as I was giving shit,
right.
I do think that as much as I was giving shit about Blade is just going to be about him fighting vampires, I do think part of the problem that they may have been running into is that Blade, in a way, because of that end credit sequence, was a continuation of Eternals.
Yeah.
Because if Black Knight is in Eternals with Blade, Black Knight wants to get Circe back. Circe was taken by a Celestial, and that opens you up to a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
And they were finally like, oh, fuck, Bob Iger's not letting us do Eternals 2. This whole Eternals storyline is problematic. Fuck it. Get rid of all of that. Let's just have Blade fight vampires. So I do think that's where that statement, as silly as that statement kind of sounds, I do think that's in at least partially where that statement comes from.
Okay. Are we good with this? Do we want to move on with the Blade stuff?
You're the boss.
Oh, great. All right, we're moving on. This just broke right now. Speaking of Marvel, so it fits within our Marvel roundup. Sony has pushed Kraven the Hunter from August 30th to December 13th now, and it is taking the Karate Kid spot that was the reboot there with Macchio and I think Jackie Chan, and they moved that from December 13th to May 30th of 2025. So pushing Kraven to December 13th, is that a good sign or a bad sign? And remember, Aaron Taylor-Johnson yesterday was confirmed. He is now going to be part of the 28 days later or 28 months later, whatever it's called, 28 years later, the second installment, although the new installment rather, of that series. So Is this a good sign or a bad sign? Because it feels like a bad sign to me, gentlemen.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Well, it's hard to say because traditionally, and I mean, I mean very traditionally, because in the world we live in right now, I kind of like a lot of movies break this rule, but traditionally, late August is where you put a stinker.
True.
And
true.
December, the middle of December is actually a very, very busy time in movies.
Yeah, Wonka just debuted there and weighed over $600 million. Right.
Like you're getting into the holidays, kids are about to be on break, families want to get away from each other. Like there's a lot of reasons that movies do well during the holidays. So if you really weren't confident in Craven, moving it into the middle of December seems like a weird move. That being said, I have heard that this movie is not good. So we'll see.
Poisonous Plants disagrees with you. Craven's done good in test screening, surprising. So I don't know. There's conflicting reports.
Listen, I'm not. I trust the sources that I know. They could be wrong, or maybe people really like it. I have heard from some people that it is really not great. But look, as much as I hate the, what do they call it? The Sony Marvel Universe without a Spider-Man, but we're still trying.
Spumcy. The Sony Pictures Universe of Marvel characters. Spumcy. It's not hard. Come on.
The Sony Universe of characters that aren't Spider-Man, but we really want Spider-Man, so we're going to keep making movies. Please let us have Spider-Man. What's that acronym? You know what? If this movie came out and it was cool, I'd be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Very true. Shannon, do you like this move?
Oh, so the last weekend in August, and granted, this is an R-rated film. The last weekend in August, kids are back in school. Traditionally, that is where the summer movie season, it is already done. Now, I will disagree that December 13th is technically mid-December. December movies start the third week when people are out of school. And in December 13th, they are not out of school. They are still very much in school. True. So this is, it's a date to a date at this point. If they were to move that to December 20th or December 18th on that Wednesday, I'd be like, oh, okay. It seems like you're confident you have something here. Yeah. But the first, like you have your Thanksgiving movies, then there's a lull, and then you have your Christmas movies. And in between, it's kind of a no man's land that you might get something good. But traditionally, and granted, you know, superhero movies have really bucked tradition. Traditionally, in between those two, if something comes out, it might not be the best.
Yeah, right now it would compete on December 13th with The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, which is the animated Lord of the Rings movie. But right after that is The Lion King, Sonic the Hedgehog. Right after. So December is not as strong of a month necessarily as you might think. So maybe they think this is they can claim some territory.
Well, right after. What is right after? Are you talking about the date?
Yeah, I'm talking about the date. December 13th, right? When it comes out.
Okay.
That's right now Craven is there and Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. Right after December 13th on December 20th is Mufasa, The Lion King, Sonic the Hedgehog. So
yeah. Mufasa, that is where the movie starts.
And smash Craven, possibly, if it doesn't catch on, you know? And Gladiator 2 comes out November 22nd. Wicked Part 1, November 27th. I don't remember what Night Bitch is. That comes out the weekend before. But you've got Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which has been a juggernaut, those first two movies, and the Nosferatu movie. I mean, the fact that they didn't move it into January means they have some kind of confidence in it. But I think maybe they're taking their chances. Because remember, Aquaman 2 was dumped in December. And that made $400 million. But I don't think Warner Brothers was expecting that film to make.
But when in December? When in December? It wasn't the first 2 weeks.
No. It was like, it wasn't the first 2 weeks? I thought it was the first 2 weeks. Okay.
I think it was December 18th. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. So we'll see, I guess. We'll see. But interesting move. Pushing it now like almost... 4 months now from where it was originally scheduled. So, okay. Let's move on to some more Deadpool stuff. Marvel stuff. Let's hit the Deadpool Wolverine story here, Michael, as you were alluding to earlier. Speaking to... This is coming out. The trailer came out earlier this week. If you want to see us break down the trailer. We did a special Geek Bites episode that you can watch or listen to on our podcast feed of us breaking it down. But Sean Levy was asked by AP News about what people would need to see to understand the movie. And he said, quote, "I was a good student in school. I'll do my homework as an adult, but I'm definitely not looking forward to doing homework when I go to the movies. I very much made this film with certainly a healthy respect and gratitude towards the rabid fan base that has peak fluency in the mythology and lore of these characters in the world. But I didn't want to presume that. This movie is built for entertainment with no obligation to come prepared with prior research." Now, that all sounds sweet, but I don't know how you're going to present the TVA without doing a little research, or the void without doing a little research, or that creature from the smoke creature from the void. So, gentlemen, do you buy this? Is this their way of trying to get people into the theater and not feel like they're doing homework? What do you think of this?
I mean, there is a possibility that whatever sort of information that is delivered to Wade Wilson via Matthew McFadden's Mr. Paradox, that there is going to be some expository information that is delivered that hopefully will catch the audience up. Did he say MCU homework?
He didn't say MCU specifically at all.
He just said homework in general.
Homework in general.
Because my guess is if you're going to see the third Deadpool film, you saw the first two. So you do have an idea of
the assumption is baked into that. Yeah.
Yeah. How the story is going to progress. And most moviegoers have a broad sense of what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. Right. So if the link, basically, like the moment in the trailer that we see him looking at the monitors and there's footage from, you know, old adventures, my guess is most people are going to, if they don't know the specific film, they're going to know who the character is. Like, you're going to know that's Thor, that's Captain America. I think it's when they go deep into the Fox universe that you have Pyro and you have Lady Deathstrike. It's like, these are older movies. Yeah. So it surprises me that they are so, or rather, Sean Levy is so confident that it's like, nope, you don't need to know anything. Just go in.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on these comments from Sean Levy here, Mike?
I mean, this is, comic books have been doing this for years, and so I don't think it's hard to do. And I think X-Men 97 is doing it really well at the moment. I mean, we'll see about next week with Bo DeMaio saying you need to go watch One Man's Worth. But kind of to Shannon's point, like, yeah, Lady Deathstrike's in the movie. Yeah, Pyro's in the movie. So if I'm an X-Men fan and I've seen all the movies and they show up as bad guys, cool. But if their role in the movie is to be bad guys for Cassandra Nova, who has assembled all of these villains that have been stuck in the void and they've all been working for her, and I don't need to know like, unless Lady Deathstrike shows up and says, "Logan, do you remember that time that I fought you in that lab?" Like, all right. Like, that's the thing is in X-Men 97, we've seen Multiple Man, we've seen Pixie, we've seen Strong Guy, we've seen all of these characters that have shown up in the background and done stuff. And if you're an X-Men fan and you love Easter eggs, it's, oh, look who that is, look who that is. But you don't need to know them. Like, you don't need to know that Storm is technically leader of the Morlocks and fought Callisto. Like, you don't need to know those things. So having characters show up, or having the TVA or Alioth or these things be in the movie, there's a world in which just enough is explained that you can have a great time. Like, to Shannon's point, if Matthew McFadden is like, oh, we represent an organization that makes sure the multiverse stays in line without falling apart. And Deadpool's like, what the fuck does that sound like? That sounds like a really deep explanation that I should have to watch two seasons of a Disney Plus show for. And he's like, nope, that's all you need to know. And you're like, okay, great. Like, the combination of it's actually very possible to do something where a bunch of characters show up that have past histories, but you don't need to know it all to enjoy your story, combined with the fact that you have a lead character that can literally break the fourth wall and tell you what you need to know.
Yeah.
It's very possible that this movie can serve both, that like all of us who are super nerdy and have watched every single Marvel thing and have watched all of these superhero movies ever since the early 2000s can go, oh my God, look, oh, it's her. Oh, that little bit is funny. Oh, that was a funny wink and a nod to that one joke from that movie. And then your friend sitting next to you who literally hates superhero movies, but you drug them to this because they like Ryan Reynolds goes, I really like that. That was a ton of fun. Who were those people? Like, this movie could do both pretty easily.
I don't know about easily, but it could. Yeah. I like Sean, director. You don't need to do homework. The villain is Cassandra Nova, everyone. Who? So, yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I think that's a fair point. I just think that, like, I'm so tired of this idea of, oh, it's homework. It's as if we're making you eat spinach. This some of this stuff you're going back to watch is actually really good. Loki season one and two are fucking good. You know, the first Deadpool movie is fucking good. The second one's okay. And so you're going back. X-Men Origins Wolverine, I guess, if you want to go knee deep, because there's no way Ryan isn't making a joke about that. So you could do that. But like, the homework you're being asked to do isn't like some terrible shit you've got to watch. Most of the stuff they're asking you to do to watch this movie, or you might need to do to watch this movie, is good stuff. So, well, I don't understand why homework is now becoming the thing that people run back
to. But it didn't become a thing until like the past 5 years or so.
Right.
Like
right.
Nobody was complaining about homework on the road to Avengers Infinity War.
Because we were getting
Endgame.
Good movies.
Because you were, yeah. To your point, because we were getting chocolate cake. I think that now people do think they're getting spinach.
Yeah,
that's the thing is there's so much. And also between the Disney Plus shows and the Marvel movies coming out and having so many coming out in a year.
Yeah.
It for some people, given the quality level of all of those, and not all of them are bad, but not all of them are great.
Right.
And so there was a little bit of, no, this does feel like I'm eating spinach. And why am I watching all these shows that I don't care about? Just so that I have the information for this movie that I'm only marginally excited about at this point. Hmm. And I think that people don't feel like it's homework if they're having fun. I don't think the critique of I don't want to do homework is I don't blame the fans who are saying that for saying it. I blame the studio for making it feel like homework.
Well, and also, and this is specifically to the Cassandra Nova comment in the chat. How many people went into X2 and knew who William Stryker was?
Right. Good point.
I mean, you see, 100%. Hey, a military guy. Got it. You're going to see a bald woman come out who has very similar powers to Charles Xavier. Oh, guess what? That's his twin.
Right.
Got it. Like, you know, I don't think it's as difficult as people might be making it. I mean, again, if you have a familiarity with those old Fox Marvel movies, then seeing Pyro, that's going to be awesome. But if you see a guy light up a ball of fire in his palm, it's like, okay, I got it. I get who he is.
Right. Well, I think it's different with something like Stryker, though, too, because that's a human being, right? Cassandra is a completely different species that was living on a sewer wall. Like, how they're going to explain that shit?
Wow. Somebody just really came out with some anti-mutant rhetoric. I don't know. I guess tolerance is extinction after all. Thanks a lot. Oh, well, he's different. He's human. He's not one of those muties. Thanks a lot, John. The outlaw hates mutants.
You know what? Smashing windows is not conversation. And I think we've established that.
Ooh, I rewatched that scene today. I got to tell you, for all that Rogue kicking ass was amazing, Beast getting pissed at Trish Tilby and basically being like, shut the fuck up about people rioting in the streets. That hit the most. I love that scene so much. Ooh.
Beast was wrecking house intellectually, like Rogue was wrecking house with her power.
He was.
Physically.
Yeah, physically, exactly. Which Beast does, which I thought was great as well. One last thing to ask you guys about this, because we've talked about Deadpool Wolverine. You guys, as I said, you guys can watch our breakdown, which is up on the channel. But like, Christian and Harloff and I have a bet that the film is not going to break $1 billion. Like, I don't think it's going to break $1 billion. He thinks it's going to break $1 billion. From all the stuff around it, do you guys think there's still a Marvel malaise, a Marvel hesitation? Even if it gets good reviews, do you think it might underperform rather than overperform considering what we saw recently with the Marvels and Secret Invasion.
I won't be able to weigh in on this bet until I see it opening weekend. And it's not even about opening weekend numbers. It's not even about, I don't need to see the opening weekend numbers to bet. I need to see the movie.
Right.
I think it's going to have a massive opening weekend. Yes. Just because, as X-Men 97 has shown, like, we fucking love mutants.
Right.
We love them. And seeing Wolverine on screen in his yellow and blue, the hardcore fans are like, I want to fucking see it. I am interested in this movie. Now, if I see Deadpool 3 and I think it knocks it out of the park, I will say, yep, it's going to make a billion. It's going to surpass a billion. If I come out of that movie and go, oh, woof, guys, woof. That was a fucking mess. Like, it's all about that word of mouth. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
We walked out of that theater, and I would have told you the second I walked out of that theater that it would have made the money that it was going to make.
Right, right.
Madam Web, I also walked out of the theater and told you how much money it was going to make. But, like, so it's like, it really is the only thing that makes a movie that level of successful is word of mouth. And based on trailers, based on everything, we don't actually know.
Yeah, yeah. Shannon?
Yes. So as you all were opining on the question. So Deadpool 1 worldwide made 782. Deadpool 2 made 785.
Yes.
Logan made 619 worldwide. The Wolverine made 418 worldwide. So based off of what has come before it, setting a $1 billion goalpost, that's very optimistic. But the proof is kind of in the pudding. If people come out being like, man, you took the best of what we loved of the first two films, and you took the best of the MCU and you put them together, theoretically, yeah, then that movie should make over $1 billion. But historically, neither one of these characters on their own have done that.
Yeah, good point. Let's take one more break, and on the other side, we'll talk the Tom Holland news and get into your Streamlabs and Super Chats and wrap up the show. If you haven't sent in your Streamlabs and Super Chats, do it now. We're about to go into the section where we answer your question. So if you want your question answered, send it in as a Streamlab or a Super Chat. The address is in the description of the video and pinned in the chat. So just letting you know. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Boo doo 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 doo. Here comes the Spider-Man.
Yeah, yes, yes, here he comes. And that is what we're jumping into now. Tom Holland here. He was talking to Deadline about the idea of Spider-Man. And we know we've heard, Mike and Shannon, that there have been battles here about Sony and Tom Rothman wanting to make another Spider-Man No Way Home. And Feige going, no, I want to go ground base. I want to make it your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man in Brooklyn and blah, blah, blah. Well, he was asked about his fourth film as Spider-Man here. And here are his quotes. I'm going to read them all back to back, and then we'll have a conversation quickly about it. He said, the simple answer is that I'll always want to do Spider-Man films. I owe my life and career to Spider-Man. So the simple answer is yes, I will always want to do more. This is the first time in this process that I, Tom Holland, have been a part of the creative so early. It's just a process where I'm watching and learning. It's just a really fun stage for me. Like I said, everyone wants it to happen, but we want to make sure we're not overdoing the same things. We have the best in the business working toward whatever the story might be. But until we've cracked it, we have a legacy to protect. The third movie was so special in so many ways that we need to make sure we do the right thing. I have read between the lines in conversations and in back and forths and emails and text messages. And it seems to me that Tom is making it very clear that he is leaning towards the Feige Marvel ground-based type of approach. Then he is leaning towards the Tom Rothman massive type approach. What do you think about this? And is he long for Spider-Man films, or is this like, are we nearing the end of Tom Holland as Spider-Man?
Again, I think you look historically at the track records, and Marvel, despite the fact that they aren't batting, they don't have as high a batting average as they once did, it's still way better than what Sony has done with the live action Spider-Man films. So absolutely, he wants to go with Feige and company. And also, the thing that made No Way Home so special is because nothing like that had been done.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that they can't revisit it again, but if that is your immediate follow-up act, it's not special. You are diluting the thing that got people so excited and got people back into the movie theaters towards the end of the pandemic in December of 2021. So doing something different, when you look at where the character is right now, that he lives in a world where people don't know who he is. People have no knowledge of Peter Parker. Doing a big sort of multiversal adventure sounds like a bad idea. I mean, the thing that makes Peter Parker compelling as a character is not Spider-Man, it's Peter Parker. Yeah. And getting to watch him in sort of a street-level adventure, maybe they add in Daredevil, maybe they add in Ant-Man for reasons, but getting to see a smaller adventure where the emotional stakes are high because of what just happened.
Yeah.
To me, that is a far more interesting story. And if they end up going with Kingpin, and that's an if, like, you know, they haven't said, you know, yay or nay. Right. Vincent D'Onofrio, to this point, he's got a really solid track record playing Wilson Fisk, and making him the bad guy, I think sounds like a lot of fun. So the idea that, like, I don't think Tom Holland is ready to ride into the sunset yet with his web shooters. I think he probably has another trilogy in him. Knowing that potentially he could hand that off to a Miles Morales. But yeah, I mean, I think he absolutely sees the creative point of view of Feige and company versus the corporate point of view of Sony.
What do you think of these comments here, Mike?
I mean, Shannon's right. But more specifically, No Way Home doesn't just work because we hadn't seen it before.
Mm.
Like, No Way Home, I'll give them more credit than that. No Way Home should have not worked. Mm. Like, putting those two in a movie with Tom Holland and having everything go down the way it did, like, it's so much. I remember when we were talking trailers, I was like, there's no way that Andrew Garfield is going to catch MJ, like, that wouldn't make sense. That's not his movie. And it actually did make it make sense. But the reason it works specifically from a storytelling standpoint is that when Aunt May died and Peter Parker was at his lowest, two people from different universes who were the only two people in the world that really understood what he was going through were there for him in that moment.
Yep.
And then when he was so filled with anger that he was about to kill Green Goblin, Tobey Maguire stops him. So in addition to, yes, it's awesome. Oh my God, look, there's three Spider-Men. Look at all of them working together. We had some really fun jokes about web shooters. Emotionally, Aunt May died and you have that amazing scene with the three of them and you're like, this movie fucking rocks. Hmm. Well, it happened. You can't do it again. And Shannon's absolutely right about the next movie. There's an expectation in the end of No Way Home that Peter Parker is all on his own. That's
right.
Literally the promise at the end of No Way Home is Peter Parker is all on his own. He doesn't have Tony Stark's suit. He doesn't have his friends. He doesn't have Ned in the chair. He's all on his own.
Yeah.
The second the other two show up, he's not on his own. So, like, Kevin Feige is fighting against this because it's absolutely inherently 100% wrong given the promise of what we were told at the end of No Way Home. So doing it is absolutely a disaster waiting to happen. And I really hope they don't try and do this thing where they come to some kind of, oh, well, we'll have Andrew Garfield show up in the third act to help. You know, like, any way they do it, it's going to be bad. And I think, John, you're right about reading between the lines. Tom Holland is clearly saying, I want to do Spider-Man forever. I love it so much. We've got to get the right story, not something we've done before. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what deals have been signed yet, but if deals haven't been signed yet, Tom Holland is making it very clear what his opinion is. Now, look, once the money truck shows up at your house and just goes beep, 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 and dumps like $3 billion on your front lawn, maybe you've decided whatever they decided is the right story. But I think he's making it clear what his preference would be.
Yeah. I think so too. I think it makes it very, very clear which side he's on. So we'll see. All right, I think that's everything for the Marvel Roundup. Anything else you guys want to add? Or are we good to go to jump into these Streamlabs and Super Chats?
How about the rumors that Kiki Palmer wants to be Rogue?
Let's do it. Gentlemen, that did pop up this week. There are rumors Kiki Palmer playing Rogue. Do we like this idea? How do we feel about this idea? Thoughts?
They haven't said Rogue. There's rumors that Marvel has approached Kiki Palmer. Mm. Kiki Palmer has just made it very clear on social media that she would like to play Rogue. So I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I like Kiki Palmer as a performer. I mean, I think she's very entertaining. I think she was very funny in Nope. While at the same time having some emotional depth. Could that be Rogue? Absolutely. Like I, you know, was reading one of the articles and her responded to someone and she said she typed sugar, which I'm like, okay, so you've clearly read a little bit. Is the first new person they cast with X-Men, is it going to be Rogue? I don't know. I mean, far, the people in the X universe in Marvel, they're people who have come before.
Yeah. Well, Rogue was in the X-Men.
Well, no, I understand that. But we haven't seen Anna Paquin show up as Rogue. I'm saying that the X-Men that we've seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we've seen Beast, which was Kelsey Grammer, and granted, Kelsey Grammer, but it's Kelsey Grammer. She would be the first, if this isn't indeed true, she would be the first new X person cast.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Marvel's approaching her now. We don't know for what. We don't know for what. So maybe Kiki Palmer just shows up in freaking Thunderbolts and we're like, oh, there you go. Yeah. Just because Kiki Palmer wants to be Rogue doesn't mean that's why Marvel approaching her. But I mean, in general, at some point in the not too distant future, they're going to start casting X-Men. At a certain point, mutants are coming and they're going to show up. Like, we're going to start finding out sooner than later, I would imagine, what some of those plans are. And I do think, you know, it's funny. Rogue's always been one of my favorites, mainly because I grew up in the 90s and watched a lot of X-Men, the X-Men animated series. But, you know, Rogue sort of faded to the background a bit in the recent years. She's always been around, but she hasn't been front and center the way she was. And boy, X-Men 97 has turned that around.
Yeah.
I mean, Rogue and Gambit are kind of front and center in people's minds right now. So would Kiki Palmer be a good Rogue? I think she would. I think she's really funny. She's really great. And she definitely has the voice spot on when she does it. But I think that more than that, and not that I didn't like Anna Paquin's Rogue, but I would love to see a Rogue in live action that is giving me what animated Rogue has been giving me in the past few weeks.
Well, don't you think that going forward, because Feige and company, I mean, they are aware of what their fan base thinks and says. Do you think going forward that they are going to make different choices and that they're going to make Rogue not a kid, not someone who's discovering their powers for the first time? Are they going to make Logan 5'3"? Like, are they going to take those cues from X-Men 97 that people are responding to the series and they're using the traditional ways that the characters have been presented, I guess.
I mean, in general, not completely. I'm sure as soon as I say this, everyone's going to point out that I'm wrong and they break the rules all the time. But in general, right now, we live in an era where the tendency to want to be more comic book accurate than not seems to be the way. Like when X-Men 2 came out and when Blade and X-Men 2 and The Crow and those early – or X-Men 1, those early, early days, like it was kind of like you were really struggling to be remotely comic books accurate. I mean, you think of X-Men 1 when Wolverine puts on the black suit and complains about it and Scott Summers is like, what, you want yellow spandex? And now we're about to go see Deadpool 3 and we're all freaking out because Wolverine's finally in yellow and blue spandex. Like, we are definitely more comic book accurate than we used to be. That being said, I mean, there is one of the reasons Anna Paquin is a kid is the same reason that Jubilee was the one that was introduced in the first episode of 90s X-Men. There's always been, and Sunspot kind of filled that role in this version of X-Men, or X-Men animated series in X-Men 97, is that it's a kid who gets brought in by the mutants into the mansion, and that's our way in to like learn stuff. So I don't know that they're going to have to go down that road this time. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I like the look. I think the look works. I think if you're going to, and I hear you about the comic book accurate thing, but I think Kiki is one of those actresses that can transcend that kind of thing. And I think she'd be fantastic, you know, and you can keep the origin, the Mississippi stuff, all of that can work. That I think would be great. To see a black woman play this character, I think would be fascinating and interesting, and exploring what that would mean. I mean, the fact that she can take someone's powers, what is that, and experience their experience, I think would be fascinating. But I mean, Kiki's a great choice. So do I see her as a rogue? Fuck yeah. Let's see what happens. Let's have fun. Do I think they'll go comic books accurate? Maybe, because we see this happening more and more. The pushback against diversity and inclusion that is happening all across the world.
But that's not world. That's not what I was referring to.
I'm saying this, not anyone else. I am saying this. This idea of being comic books accurate or comic book accurate to go with a white actress. I think Rogue is a character that you can play with. And if you go with Kiki Palmer, I don't think you'll get the backlash that we've seen recently about other decisions and other points of view. So I think it's a good choice. I think it's a boldly artistic choice. And I think it could be fun to see the exploration of Kiki playing Rogue. So I would be down with it is all I'm getting at. So, yeah.
I think my only, and this has nothing to do with Kiki Palmer. This has to do with Rogue.
Right.
Is Rogue your cornerstone that you are casting off of?
I don't think so.
I don't think they are. But I mean, again, just to be super clear, the rumors that Marvel has approached Kiki Palmer and the fact that Kiki Palmer really wants to play Rogue are two separate things.
Yeah.
So Marvel approaching Kiki Palmer probably means nothing that we've been talking about in the past 10 minutes.
Could be true.
Would they cast her as Rogue? Would they approach her and say, look, we know you love Rogue. We want to talk to you about being Rogue. Doesn't mean they're not talking to other people. We just haven't heard it. Like, I don't think that Rogue is the first person that you cast and you like build your cast off of that. You're going to cast Professor X and Magneto and Storm and like, you know, whatever mutant. And there's probably one or two mutants in there that we're not even thinking about that they're going to put front and center for the first time. So no, I don't think Rogue is the first person you cast, but that doesn't mean that they're not talking to Kiki Palmer about it and also having conversations with other people.
I think it's still Scott and Jean. It has to be Scott and Jean. I think they've got to establish that firmly. And then from there you can flesh out the team. And I think having her come in as part of the group, I think would be great. It's a great energy. She's a fantastic actress.
You could also cast her and have her be a villain.
Sure. Very
Rogue
true.
Rogue was a villain before she was an X-Man. So, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you could do.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our Marvel roundup. Let's get into these Streamlabs and Super Chats. Let's roll through these. Aaron says, tasks given to contestants range from physical challenges such as eat as much watermelon as you can in 1 minute to more complex artistic tasks. That means a taskmaster. Aaron trying to push us into taskmaster. So
now I got to watch it.
Check it out. Yeah. You'll have to check it out, Mike. Let us know.
Taskmasters. Okay. I'm going to watch it.
Okay. All right. I did one episode. It's not my cup of tea, even though I like that comedian. Francisco Lopez says, what age range do you want the MCU to get for Charles, Eric, and the rest of the X-Men? Also, will you guys do a spoiler review of Invincible, or is it too late? I feel like it's too late at this point, but maybe. But what do you guys think of the MCU?
Spoiler review. I loved it. I loved it.
You got it.
It was great.
You got it. Charles, Eric, and the rest of the X-Men. What age range do you guys think? I think 20s, but what do you guys think? Do you think they're going to go older?
20s for
Charles and Eric?
I don't know. I mean, 20s for the X-Men. And then,
oh.
Yeah, I guess in their 30s, Charles and Xavier. But
I'm saying at Eric. The very youngest, mid-40s to early 50s for Charles and Eric.
Really?
And late teens, early 20s for the rest of them.
Interesting. Okay. Well, what do you think, Mike? Are you on the same page?
The only thing, I mean, I think you go younger with everybody and you could potentially go a little bit younger than Shannon is saying. The only thing, and I just don't know what you do with it, is just timeline wise. I don't know how you keep Eric's Holocaust backstory in 2024 and he's 30. You know what I mean? Like I don't. It either gets removed like my grandparents were in the Holocaust, like I don't, or it becomes a completely different origin, which I think that's such a big part of who Eric is now. But other than that, other than the Holocaust part of it, besides the Holocaust, I think that you could make both Professor X and Magneto like a late 30s.
Yeah.
Kind of like you're sort of taking where they were in First Class and making that the modern kind of version of them. And that, and like in First Class, we watched Professor X put together his first team of X-Men. Right. So making them sort of that age and putting them together and saying, oh, here's Scott, Jean, Beast. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you make an excellent point. I hadn't factored in the Holocaust thing. Not thing like obviously, but like that's a possibility. Yeah. I mean, could you use, and in no way am I saying this is comparable, but the overall point is this was carried out by people who hate Jewish people and this idea of othering people. Right. So the Munich thing, that the Munich tragedy, that the Olympic tragedy, that's a little closer, right? Could be 40s, maybe.
I think tragedy hopping starts to feel a little weird.
I don't disagree with you. The guy's got to be 80 years old if you're going to do it now, right? I mean, Eric would have to be 70 or 80 if you're going to do it now if his parents are Holocaust. I don't think they want to go with a 70 or 80 year old Magneto. I just don't. You don't think that you think they do?
No, I don't. So yeah. That's right. That I think that they've had these exact same discussions, and I think that trying to figure out what to do with that and how to nuance that bit of it or dump it entirely and do something totally different. But if you do it differently, I don't think, like, okay, for example, I don't think you can be like, ooh, it's not the Holocaust, but it could be this thing. I think you go, and again, I've heard these rumors long ago, and I don't think these rumors are still around. I don't know, but like, if you make Professor X and if you make Magneto and Professor X Black Americans, then you have a bunch that they can pull from, and it's a very different, or you know what I mean? Like, then you're like, okay, well, let's go with that, you know, like, and I don't know, again, that feels a little weird too. So putting that issue aside, I think in general Hollywood terms, you're about to relaunch X-Men live action with Marvel. You're going to want to cast everybody as young as possible so that you get as many movies as possible out of them.
That's my mentality too. Yeah. So we'll see though. We'll see. Vincent Zawada says, spoiler thoughts on Shogun. I don't want to spoil
it. I didn't finish it yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Haven't finished.
I have one episode left. I've been saving it.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say. If you want spoiler thoughts on Shogun, Steve Morris, my co-host on the Cinephiles, and I have done weekly reviews, spoiler reviews. You can go back and watch that. And when these two finish it, maybe we'll do a conversation on it on the show at some point. Thank you, Vincent. Sean says, hello, buddies. Do you think the success of X-Men 97 will move up the intro of the X-Men into the MCU, and who would you like to see make up the team? Ooh, that's a long question. maybe one or two people we want to suggest, but do you think the X-Men 97 has moved up the timeline, gentlemen? Do you think that's possible?
No.
Okay.
No, I think they had an idea of when and where they want to introduce the X-Men in terms of their own film.
Yeah.
I think they have an idea of what they wanted to do that. And despite this, whatever the success of X-Men 97 is, I don't think that's going to affect those plans. That would be my guess. And in terms of people that we'd like to see on the team, I mean, I'm a big fan of Hank McCoy. I hope we get to see Beast.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, we've already seen him.
The new one. not Kelsey Grammer, not Nicholas Holt, the new Hank McCoy.
Let me add this real quick, Mike. Jeff Snyder, obviously on the hot mic here, he said the other day, and he said it on the show last night, and he said it in his newsletter, that he thinks the official announcement for a writer will be made in the quote next few weeks. So it's kind of a few can mean anything. But it seems to be that he's insinuating we're going to get an announcement of the writer soon. So do you think the success of 97 moved this up or not?
No, they've got so much they need to do. And I think that here's why I really don't think that. Here's if you've read Secret Wars, the Jonathan Hickman version. The end of Secret Wars is basically Franklin Richards rebuilding the universe and taking bits and pieces of everything and saying, all right, let's just put it in a blender. And now this is the big one universe that we're going to have. And so I think that we're going to see a bunch of X-Men that we've seen in the past, and we're going to see some really big cameos and whatever. And then I think it's after Secret Wars that we get X-Men. Like they could really easily, based on the way Secret Wars ended in the comics and the way it might conceivably end in the movies, kind of go, it doesn't mean they're going to take that cast and make them the X-Men, but right. It also doesn't mean that we have to explain where mutants came from. Like, we're just going to take a little bit of everything and put it in a universe and go, okay, now there's mutants and people deal with it. And so they can kind of get a little bit of a, let's just do what we want. So I don't think that that's moved up the timeline, because I think the timeline is still X-Men are coming after Secret Wars. As far as who I'd like to see, I mean, I like so many of the X-Men, but there's definitely a, wouldn't it be nice to do a slow roll with a plan? And the first movie is literally Scott, Jean, Bobby, Hank, and Warren, like just the original five. And then maybe by the end of the movie, we get Storm and Wolverine and Rogue and whoever else kind of come. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know that the original five are going to satisfy everyone's needs, because Storm, particularly Storm and Wolverine, but a few others have kind of become so big in everyone's mind. But it would be nice to sort of get back to those original origins and kind of tell a story that feels like it's honoring the way that they really rolled out in the comics.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to be an origin story, or if they're going to go just the route that they've already existed and they're functioning. Like an X-Men, like the X-Men 97 team, if that's the live action team, I'd be very happy with that team.
I mean, the X-Men 97 team is like, and maybe it's because of the X-Men animated series, but X-Men 97 lineup is my iconic of all time lineup.
Yeah,
it is, like that is my X-Men team. To like, there's a lot of other mutants that I love, but that X-Men team is my X-Men team.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll see. Varrock 408 says, do you guys need another trailer for explaining the story of Deadpool 3? Or are you okay with keeping the mystery? It's a good question. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get trailers and TV spots, but I agree with you. Like, I'm done. I'm good. I'm in. Let's go. Right. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm good. Well, I don't need to see anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the mainly Wade trailer. You got the mainly Logan trailer. Got it. Good to go.
Yeah. All right, let's hit to these other Streamlabs that have come through. All right, Hot Security Guard says, hey, guys, have any of you been able to see Spider-Man 1 and 2 back in the theaters? I know they're dated, but I especially love Spider-Man 2 and the elevated train fight. Also, Mummy and the First Alien re-released this weekend. Loving these recent re-released movies in theaters. Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man 1 and 2 have done well box office wise back in the theaters. I think almost $1 million each, which is not bad for a re-release. So, gentlemen, have you gone back to see these in the theaters, and what are your thoughts on these two films being back in the theaters?
I did go to see the 20th anniversary screening of Shrek 2 yesterday. The Raimi Spider-Man films have never held a precious place in my heart. Despite really liking Tobey Maguire and loving Alfred Molina, those will not be movies that I will probably be going to the theaters to see again.
Okay. Mike?
I have not gone to see them, but I will say, as I've been going to the movie theater, I have enjoyed seeing the number of people showing up in Spidey cosplay as they are going to see the movies. It fills my heart with joy. There's so many movies that are actually out right now that are new that I haven't gotten to see, that I feel like the movies that are coming out, all of which I like do have on Spider-Man 1 less than the others, but like I have soft spots for, I feel like there's not enough time to see all the geeky stuff that I need to see.
Yeah. I will say that I don't see myself going back to see one or two in the theater. I've seen them plenty of times, so I don't need to see those in the theaters, but I might go see the first Alien again in the theater. I think that would be fun to see in like a really good sound system and screen, because that's one of those ones that I never really got to see in the theater, and I would love to see that one. But great on Spider-Man 1 and 2. And yes, they are dated. Some people really just can't let go of the fact of Spider-Man 2. They're like, greatest thing we ever made. I can point out all the dated and bad CGI in that film, and I just don't feel the same way about that. But I'm glad people are enjoying them. Fredtastic says, showing support for my geek dudes. Love the live show. Also, still waiting on the Cantina song humming from Shannon. So, yeah, Shannon, a little request at some point.
Have you not done the Cantina song?
Have we never done the Cantina song?
I don't know. You're in charge of the humming.
I mean, I don't know if we've ever done a Cantina centric story.
Oh, fair point. Yeah. Well, maybe
there are many well-known Star Wars themes. The next time we talk Star Wars, it will be the Cantina scene.
Vincent. Vincent, they are dated. Okay. Come on. But the train scene is awesome. That endures.
I don't actually begrudge those movies their CG. I mean, that you can't control that. Like, they were the best looking movies of their time when they came out. CG and special effects have advanced. I begrudge them their Raiminess, which is like, I know, a controversial thing, but if you're a Sam Raimi person, I think those movies do hold up. I don't think they're dated. I think they are as great today as when you saw them. If you are not the biggest Raimi person, I think there's things about that movie, those movies, that feel a little Raimi. Like, they just feel a little Raimi. So I think it really is about your aesthetic when it comes to directors.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Vincent brings up the Richard Donner films. And that's my point. The Richard Donner films, we love them for the nostalgia of them. And yes, you can poke holes in them, but I would argue they're way, I don't want to say way, but they are much better directed than the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, in my opinion, because I come away from it with much more of an emotional connection and emotional journey in both of those movies than I mean, in Spider-Man 2, 1 and 2. Yeah, that's my personal.
Yep. Look, you watch Zod and his gang.
Sure. Super cheese.
At the end of that movie, you're not going to argue that holds up well.
Yeah, no, it's
Zod, Ursa, and what's his name? Somebody in the chat, tell me what's his name. It's Zod, Ursa, and I don't know why I can't remember
the bearded it. Bearded dude. Yeah.
It's Zod, Ursa,
the guy who goes. The guy who doesn't talk.
I mean, look, the Donner movie, but that's my point, is that the Donner movies, from an effect standpoint, from a filmmaking standpoint, are just as dated and cheesy as Spider-Man 1 and 2.
100%. Yes.
But it's all about your aesthetic. If you have that Donner aesthetic, if you have that Raimi aesthetic.
Yeah. It's all personal opinion. So yeah, exactly, at the end of the day. But it's nostalgia that makes us love them as much as we do. And because I think those Spider-Man films feature the worst acting performance of James Franco's career in both of them. He is terrible as Harry Osborn. And even Willem Dafoe slides into super caricature and cheesiness at the time, which I thought they shaved down in Spider-Man No Way Home to make him much more scarier and much more effective, in my opinion, when he was doing that. So, yeah, but if you love them, God love you, go love them. Naan, that's it. Yeah. Like the bread. There we go. Doug Developer, what's up, Doug? He says, I feel like these days, if you're an aspiring writer who wants to break in with original stories, your absolute best bet would be to write a series or a limited series. Look at Baby Reindeer, Beef, and Squid Game. That's an excellent point. Gentlemen, what do you think? I mean, these streaming services need content. So certainly writing a limited series or a series might be the way to break through, rather than trying to break through as a film screenwriter. What do you guys think? As writers yourselves. Yeah.
I think the honest answer is, if you want to break into writing, you don't start out by writing your own limited series. I think that writing your own limited series is great. I think everyone who's writing right now on other TV shows wants to write their own limited series. I think if you really want to break into writing, you gotta come out to LA, you've gotta pound the pavement, you end up freelancing on some shows that you really don't love, you end up getting into a room, you end up getting staffed, you work your way up, you make your connections, eventually you get to do a show that's big enough that you get noticed, and then you get to do something big. But it's like, if you are an aspiring writer who wants to get into the business, you're going to be hard pressed to get Netflix to be like, yeah, let's give that person a limited series. What I just said is sort of the typical way,
the traditional route. Yeah,
my way was different. I was an executive for 10 years and hired a bunch of writers, and then I stopped being an executive and they hired me and I got to go write on a bunch of cool things. But I think that there's a whole like climbing the ladder of the industry before you get to break into stuff. That's the challenging hard part.
Well, and that's the majority of people who work. Now, of course, there is the minority that they got that super lucky break that they were able to jump the line a little bit. But for every beef and baby reindeer, there are thousands really good ideas that for whatever reason, if they were able to pitch, the person that they were pitching to did not latch onto that idea and did not propel them forward.
Right. Well, or like in the case of Baby Reindeer, I mean, here's a comedian who had some crazy experience and did a one-man show that was popular enough and got enough acclaim that then he got to adapt that into a thing. So, I mean, yes, to Shannon's point, there's different ways to go about doing it. And I'm not saying what I'm saying to sort of frustrate people. It's just there's a whole process of getting into the industry or try, like, it's because, like, even if you write, I think a lot of people out there who aren't in the industry have the capability to write something amazing, have probably written stuff on their own that is absolutely better than a lot of the stuff that's out there. The problem is, how do you get it in front of the right people and give them the confidence to give you a bunch of money to make your stuff?
The thing I've discovered in doing interviews with people and in, you know, being friends with all of the people we're friends with who are creatives is there's no one way to do it. It's just a matter of, like, you being in the right place at the right time with the right material and having done the work, you know. And Michael's story of being called into a Spider-Man meeting and all that came from that. It's in the right place at the right time with the right preparation, and it helped move him forward. You just never know. Right. And Michael giving Shannon an opportunity to write on these things to really show what he can do as a writer. You just never know. So those moments, it's a matter of, like, prepare yourself as much as possible and keep trying to put yourself in positions to get your stuff seen or heard or watched or listened to. And you never know what can happen. And yes, some people it's overnight. Some people are nepo babies. Some people are, you know, it takes 20 years, 30 years, you know. Like, I was, wonderful article I read on the guy who's the series regular, the actor in Abbott Elementary who plays the janitor. He had waited decades to be a series regular on a show and has finally got it. And so you just never know. And it's a matter of how much you want it. And can you be in the right place at the right time with the right preparation? It's a million ways to go. Elusive Rock says, how will the MCU Magneto still have the Holocaust pass? He'd be like 100 years old. Maybe MCU X-Men Escape and Incursion with the Fantastic Four in Fantastic Four, with the FF in Fantastic Four. Maybe. I think we covered that. But do you guys want to add anything more to that?
Well, I think what they will want to focus on in the Fantastic Four movie is the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I think potentially tacking on Xavier and Magneto and Magneto falling into this, you know, if they are in another universe, getting to ours. That sounds like a lot of heavy lifting for a movie about a team that they want to nail that movie right.
Well, yeah. and I think it's two different things. Like, I think that we are going to see mutants showing up in the lead up to Secret Wars. But I don't think that those mutants are necessarily going to be the mutants that are going to be the X-Men when we get to post Secret Wars. So I think I think that we're going to see a lot of mixing and matching of things, but then my guess right now is that the Fantastic Four movie, Franklin Richards is probably going to be a featured part of that movie, which is people aren't expecting right now. And then I think that Franklin Richards is going to be important in Secret Wars and then sort of reboot everything going forward. So that's my guess.
Feels good. Philly G, thanks so much for the donation there. The Streamlab, rather. Ryan Clem Barnes says, should Secret Wars take the MCU back to phase one simplicity of storytelling? Would not be mad if Marvel Studios asked Michael or Coy Jandrew to consult on X-Men projects. Well, for sure. Especially Michael. Yeah.
I think basically post Secret Wars, it becomes a phase one for Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and I think they were always planning this. So I don't think this is in reaction to, everyone's feeling like Marvel has gotten too big. Secret Wars in the comics, by definition, what it did was, hey, let's reset everything and kind of start fresh. And I think that we're going to get out of Secret Wars and they're going to cherry pick the things that they really love the most, set them in that universe, and sort of we're going to see like this reboot that all of the promotion around it is going to be like, now's the time to jump in.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. Shannon, anything you want to add? Are you good?
No, that sounds pretty good.
All right, There we go. I think that's all the Streamlabs and Super Chats. We did it. Thank you all so much for joining us for this impromptu live show of the Geek Buddies. We had over 300 of you joining us for a majority of the conversation. So thank you very, very much. Don't forget to subscribe. Oh, no, you guys handle that. All right, Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, I'd like to follow us on social media on Twitter. It's at Geek_Buddies, on Instagram at @_Geek_Buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media on Twitter, it's at @Shannon_McClung, on Instagram at @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is at MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is at The Roca Says.
Mikey.
After you do all that following, we would also love it if you smash that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, check out all the amazing content he has got there. Leave your comments below. If you weren't commenting in the live chat, let us know what you thought of everything. Let us know what your guesses are, your hopes are, your dreams are. We want to hear all of it. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And don't forget, as we said, we talked about the Deadpool Wolverine trailer. If you want to hear our thoughts, that is up. And Michael and I reviewed the most recent episode of X-Men 97. That is up as well if you want to have some more Geek Buddies this weekend. But until then, we will talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies.
Hey!
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.